Hangry, hmm? Anyway, life continues in its own merry little way as we give you the weather forecast for the Lincolnshire area and surrounding regions, of course, possibly including Goole. The highs today, 19 degrees centigrade, lows 12 degrees centigrade. There'll be a few showers, but some good sunny spells later in the afternoon.
This is the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren 107.3 FM.
There we are, you see, it all slots together. So, Sheila, we defined you as a publicist and life coach. Stuart, how would you define yourself? Writer? Ex-police officer? General all-round good egg to actually go to when you're looking for Gibbs Consultancy? What's your line?
I would say probably a consultant fits the whole lot, I think. Consult about safety, consult about writing, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Consultant, Sheila. And if you go to the web, that wonderful sort of techie thing, and plump in the words Gibb Consultancy, you see a wonderful scenario of providing talks and advice to help you stay safe. Sheila will be quizzing you, Stuart, in a few seconds. But before we actually move down that line, Sheila, how did the event on Saturday go? You may have seen we were just down the road from you in Howden.
We were indeed, yeah.
Sensational sort of fun times with respect to the 40-mile cycling journey that went on in aid of the North Yorkshire Air Ambulance. How was the village fete slightly up the road from Howden? Did you see any of the cyclists? Did they pass you by?
Well, actually, we had, no, your lot didn't, but we had our own group of vintage cyclists.
Ooh.
They come every year, and they come for the weekend, and they camp in the village, and they ride around, and it's fascinating to see them on these great big penny farthings.
I was going to say, so the genuine penny farthings taking place,
and see somebody riding it, just riding it up the road, you know, amazing.
See, I think we should start the campaign, Stuart, to bring back the penny farthing. I think that's what the streets of Lincoln need. And none of this, you know, larky. I mean, obviously, wear crash helmets. Clearly, we'd sort of say safety at
all. I don't think that's going to do you any good. They're so flipping high. Yeah. They really are very high. They look very vulnerable.
Yeah. In fact, you tend to sort of wonder what sort of mindset actually came up with the penny farthing. Presumably the same one who actually came up with the bubble car. Do you remember the bubble car which used to have a sort of front thing from that?
Yeah.
I think it was privileged to drive in. Well, I've never actually driven one, but I think I travelled in one a good few years ago now. But it was quite surreal in its own way. But bring back the bubble car and the penny farthings. There we are. That's our official routine. Maybe even John Wenham might have something to say about that. Anyway, Sheila, moving on from yourself, as we said, the publicist, life coach extraordinaire, I'll add from that perspective. How would you define yourself? We put the question to Stuart, of course. So what about your own sort of life-defining aspects?
I don't know. I think when I look at everything I do, I basically work with small businesses in all sorts of capacities, whatever it is that they're doing. The life coaching bit comes around the fact that a lot of small business owners really struggle with all the demands on their time. So part of my, very often I find that the work I actually do with them, there's as much sort of talking about why I'm doing what and what they need doing, that what I can take off their shoulders, because I think if you're a small business owner, very often you get caught in the how-tos and you don't have time to stand back. So just the fact that they have maybe a call with me once or every month or so just helps to give them a little bit of time to stand back and look at their business from a bit further afield.
Stuart, I suppose you could say it's the business of writing, but I mean, clearly you had lots of years of experience as a detective chief inspector. Let's get the title
that's,
right.
Yeah, that's right.
Detective chief inspector in London and in Lincoln. You wouldn't think he was born in Newcastle, Sheila. I was shocked, but there we are. Technically, no, it wasn't Newcastle. Gateshead, let's be honest, because
there's
a big difference between
the
sort of connection, as indeed we'll go on to find with Arthur McKenzie. But, you know, as I say, 30 years of police experience. Do you find, you know, that you treat your writing now as a business? Because that was something which was talked about on another program, the late Yvonne Craig, of course, Batgirl, that she would always, when she went to conventions, even though it's public appearances, she said, look, it's a business, we need to actually work, you know, and be there.
Yeah, it's difficult to get your head round, really, especially after working in the police, where a lot of things are kind of done for you and you do your job. Now everything is mine, and I have to think about the things exactly as Sheila said. Sometimes it's about taking a step back and remembering what you're now doing and the fact that you've got to do all these things, whereas sometimes before, some of the things, you know, like the basic things, were done for you. So it's different, but very much a business, yeah. I think it has to be to make it successful.
Because, of course, without giving too much away, Sheila has had police connections. Have you not, Sheila? with Nottingham in particular, I believe.
Through a different route, but I must say, it is a fascinating time in the police service, isn't it? There's so much changing, and it's all got to change. And I think that it's a very challenging time to be in the service. Very interesting. interesting to see how many people are stepping up and, you know, doing their best to really look at how we go forward, because we can't continue to do the way we've, you know, we've been doing in the past. The money isn't there, and the resources aren't there. So
no.
Interesting times.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you need to have more time spent on filling in reports and bureaucracy, I feel, Stuart. I mean, that's the
yeah, but people want figures, you see. The only reason that they do that is because people want figures. You only get figures if people fill in reports, and that's, you know, that's one of the problems. It's the dichotomy that people want the figures, but you only get the figures by spending time producing the information that allows you to produce the figures.
In the classic words of Yul Brynner, is a puzzlement. Not two people might actually get that reference. What the hey, penny farthings, Yul Brynner. It's almost as though we're in a time-travelling machine here. Stuart, yeah. We'll move on to your website. Home security, bogus calling, telephone calls, postal safety, mobile phones, scammers. We've already commented on the sensational videos you put there in terms of advice. It seems so obvious, and yet you still find, in terms of providing this public service, there are still folk who might not even be classified as vulnerable folk, but they can be taken in by bogus callers and all sorts of things.
Yeah, very much so. A lot of the people I do talk with around safety are generally, not always, but older people, very trusting generation, and if you ring them up and tell them you're a police officer or you're from the bank, they're going to believe you sometimes, and I think that's the problem, really. It's trying to embed into people that you guess you can trust people, but please don't give out all your information, because on the telephone it could be anybody on the other end of the line and you really don't know. And sometimes these days there's no way of checking either. You know, the criminals are quite sophisticated in the methods.
It's quite interesting because this morning I was contacting a bank, and because I was expecting to go to the automated system but didn't, and actually ended up being put through to a caller in a different country. I think we all know where we're coming from here. I'm not really mentioning the actual sort of brand itself. I just wanted to find out one piece of information. But I was asked a number of questions, including one or two that I don't normally actually give, and there was a part of me which said, should I actually challenge? I didn't in the end, so hopefully, you know, all's well with that. But there is that sort of sense of thinking, really? You don't normally ask for that. Why do you need that from that perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we've all probably had the phone calls where you answer the phone and the first thing that you're told is, you know, we can't tell you who we are, but for data protection purposes, we're going to ask you a list of questions. And, of course, you have no idea who you're talking to. And it's a bit of a kind of, they do it for a reason. But and I have challenged it, and more so now that I do the safety work. But when you challenge it, you get into a situation where they say to you, well, I'm not going to talk to you anymore if you won't answer my question. And suddenly it becomes a bit of a, you know, but there are other options as well. If you really are uncertain about who's ringing you, then don't tell them any information and ask them to either write to you or contact you. If you're a genuine customer of theirs, they'll have your details anyway.
Sheila, thoughts on this? I mean, it's,
No, I absolutely agree. And I think it's incredibly difficult for people to sometimes pull out what's important. I mean, one of the ones that I frequently get is the one that says that it's somebody who wants to do something with my computer. Now, if I was, you know, not alert to it, they are very persuasive, and they sort of engender a little bit of panic. And you sort of think, well, yes, maybe they, you know, we know that people can keep an eye on what's happening on your computer. And it is a real problem. And people say to me, you know, should you talk to these people? I said, absolutely not. But then, you know, they're very persuasive. They are very persuasive.
I always find that saying you're Mr. PPI actually helps from that point of view. Name, PPI. Would you like to claim some back? This is a different world entirely from that perspective. Sheila, what exciting things are you currently involved with which you'd like to shamelessly promote and plug with respect to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition?
Well, I'm actually in a little bit of limbo. I think I told you my husband had a stroke about 10 months ago.
Indeed. Is Trevor getting better?
He's getting much better.
Excellent.
Thank you very much indeed. The one-year anniversary is coming up soon, and he is infinitely better than we could ever have expected. So I think after I've had a little bit of a hiatus of sort of just concentrating on, you know, being part of that process. So that's been interesting.
Well, you can always go to gibconsultancy.co.uk and actually see Stuart's blog.
It's, I can. Yeah, I shall do that. I'm just looking at it.
Yeah, well, there you are, you see. So you see, this is what we call the 21st century, you know, that sort of interactivity as well as the telephonic voice working.
Well, especially as we've just got high-speed broadband in our village.
Oh, my word.
Whoa. You're cooking on gas.
You'll be connecting with people in Hawaii before too long. Live. It's amazing. So thoughts on Gibb Consultancy? I mean, obviously, I like the voice you can trust there, providing talks advice to help you stay safe. Anything that sort of springs to mind that emerges from
it's I think I'm very much about the feeling of a website and how it sort of feels, and it feels nice. So
very nice. Sheila Jones, it feels nice. The website, that is. Sheila, it's been a delight as ever touching with your good self. It's been far too long since we connected with your good self. I know we're talking about possibly the wheel of life, various other things. We did actually say, Stuart, Sheila and myself, back in July, we should really get together in August. And then I saw slipping by. We thought, well, let's just bowl this out there. And lo and behold, we've manifested. Put it out to the universe and poof, there it goes.
There we go.
I take it you've had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today.
I have indeed, Alex. It's been lovely to talk to you again.
Well, have a splendid Thursday, and we'll speak again hopefully very soon.
Take care.
Back to life, back to reality, back to life, back to reality.
Sure, the Karen Wheeler is being rhetorical with Back to Life. However do you want me? However do you want me in brackets there. Maybe our Acer R correspondent and wonderful all-round film critic Richard Fitzwilliams might know. Is it a rhetorical question? However do you want me, Richard Fitzwilliams?
Well, I certainly don't want the man from Uncle. May I...
Look, don't you, you wouldn't let it lie. You know, as I say, one of the great movies of 2015, I give it a 9.5 out of 10. You wouldn't.
May I defend myself by saying that you have never let Australia and Quantum of Solace lie, so
no.
I've exhumed
okay.
the man from Uncle.
Fair enough, Ski. Welcome back to the production introductions. Of course, we have Stuart Gibbons, ace crime writer, of course, and it's only a matter of time, actually, for Stuart Gibbon, your work is manifested on the silver screen, I'm sure.
That'd be nice.
It'd be good. Former detective chief inspector, it has to be said, Richard, so very important. So, you know, we're all, everything sorted. It's a very legally binding programme that we're on today, Richard. So.
I will note that.
Yeah, no arrested development, but let's talk about Mistress America, shall we?
Yes, there's plenty to talk about, because... Noah Baumbach is one of those quirky and observant directors of whom I've had a tremendous amount of pleasure. I mean, his film, firstly, The Squid and the Whale, and secondly, most recently, While We're Young. This was a movie about an older couple fascinated by a young couple and trying, so to speak, to relive their lost youth whilst not being totally aware of what agenda the young couple have. Very, very interesting. And here we have Greta Gerwig, someone I absolutely loved, Frances Ha, which was very much praised. This is also set in New York, and it's particularly entertaining and observant, a satirical movie, very, very funny in parts. Tracy, played by Lola Kirk, and a lonely college freshman. Life in it is in much enlivened by her stepsister-to-be, Brooke, played by Greta Gerwig, who is always reaching for the unattainable. She seems to be doing several things at once, and yet she doesn't really do anything properly and has ideals and dreams. Sometimes her ideas are snatched by rather ruthless friends of hers. Sometimes she has particular hopes and desires. Do they get realized, and how does this affect Tracy? And is there perhaps a little more to Tracy than a little less innocent than she actually appears? I mean, as a character study, you've got two excellent actresses, and you've also got a witty script. And what particularly appealed to me about a movie set again in Manhattan with familiar settings such as Times Square and so forth, is that you've got a series of individuals who are funny and who also, there's something rather sad about some of them, and there's quite a lot of biting satire in this movie, which I have to say critics have loved, and with very, very good reason. Baumbach is on extremely good form, and believe me, Greta Gerwig is going to feature in quite a few of the nominations and lists in the awards coming up later in the year. Lola Kirk, excellent too. One of those movies, a little bits of it appear a bit contrived, but that's sending up the superficiality of a certain type, and there are plenty of them in New York who believe they're hipsters and also are pretty ruthless. But the interesting aspect, I thought, of Gerwig's Brooke is that she isn't a totally charming, nice person. Her dreams are one thing, but also she can be pretty vicious, pretty biting herself. And as I say, there are other aspects to Tracy's character which emerge as the movie progresses. So this is a film I thoroughly enjoyed.
Oh, a touch of the Woody Allens, I feel, might be creeping in there, although uproariously funny is just one of the lines. We've been watching the trailer as you've been speaking, of course. I know you don't like trailers, Richard, but it's what we do here, Mistress America.
Well, I mean, some trailers don't contain that number of spoilers. I have seen the trailer, and this one doesn't.
Oh, okay.
No, it's just that when you get a trailer for a movie like Jurassic Park or Exodus, Gods and Kings...
Okay, I know Jurassic World was your challenge.
It's terrible.
Stuart, Mistress America, is it the kind of movie which you think, I might just check that one out?
Not sure. Richard sold it very well there, by the way.
He has, actually. It sounds like it's worth seeing. I sort of get a slight sense that it's a touch of the Woody Allens coming across there. But maybe...
It's not unlike some of Allen's work, but it's also, I have to say, Baumbach's movies, if you do enjoy them, you'll certainly enjoy this. But also if you enjoy a satire and a movie which has got a lot of laughs in it, but it's also intelligently written. It's some of the characters... so wondrously superficial that you feel that you could touch the contrivance of which they are made. But the two central characters, so well acted, and I superficiality and all, because after all, certain types of hipsters are.
Richard, I know you're one of the king of the hipsters, and I never described you as superficial in any way, shape or form. Please.
You'll find plenty, if you like this type of film, to enjoy here.
Mia Wasikowska was fantastic in Alice in Wonderland, I believe, with respect to the Tim Burton scenario. She does great stuff in every sense of the word. And bearing in mind that Flaubert had a debut novel called Madame Bovary, well, this surely has to be a win-win situation. But what's Richard's view on this particular aspect?
Definitely a win-win situation, I'm happy to say.
Word.
It's directed also by Anne Fontaine, who made Coco Before Chanel with Audrey Tautou and Benoit Poulfouter, which I thought was absolutely excellent. And here we have the teaming, what's not to love here, of Britain's Gemma Arterton and Francis Fabrice Luchini, very expressive actor.
Gemma Arterton, of course, was wonderful in Quantum of Solace. Strawberry Fields she portrayed.
She was completely wasted in that movie. You're absolutely right. Yes, and it did mean, I have to concede, that she got a lot of good publicity out of it. She was on screen for, well, I doubt it was 10 minutes, but the point is, she is extremely attractive. And Gemma Bovary is, Posy Simmons, her cartoon series and her books. Gemma Bovary also has a...
Don't forget the Centrinians duet of movies as well when it comes to
Gemma
Arterton.
Well, I vividly remember it and much enjoyed it, I have to say. Yeah, Arterton is a really big star. I also saw her in The Little Dog Laughed on stage. But what's so successful here, there are... Fabrice Luchini plays Martin Joubert. He's a humble baker, but he has an eye for a very, very pretty female. And
it's so French, Richard. So French.
So French, but also there are similarities to Tamara Drew, another of Posy Simmons' series, and turned into a book which was turned into a film, which was absolutely hilarious and also starred Gemma Arterton, and included a scene. I still laugh occasionally at the scene, a very cruel scene where horrible things happen to Roger Allam, who can't take his eyes off her as well. But what is intriguing here is there's the parallel between Flaubert's Gemma Bovary, which is set in Normandy. Joubert is familiar with the book, and he sees modern day, literally his neighbour. Will what happens so tragically in Flaubert's novel happen, and can he stop it? And when he attempts to, shall we say, interfere, there are scenes that are extremely funny, because he follows Gemma whenever he possibly can. She is married. I have to say there are certain aspects of this movie I simply didn't buy, and why she's shacked up with Charlie played by Jason Fleming, most unconvincingly. Look, I simply cannot imagine.
Jason Fleming, again, obviously interesting being cast in a period piece here, but he's wonderful in The Transporter. Trapped by convention, tempted by passion, she hoped to break free.
You know. It's contemporary, by the way, but of course based on the Flauberts. The hopes to break free, well, no wonder. I just simply don't understand why she married him in the first place.
Because Rhys Ifans in there as well.
Get on. But leaving this minor point aside, what is highly entertaining is to see how she does break free, who she does fall for. There's Herr de Bressigny, played by Neil Schneider, and, well, if I looked like him, I'd have had a very different life in past decades, I have to say, and of course she falls for him, but the trouble is he's got a monster mother, a wonderful performance by Edith Scobe. She's very haughty. Her haughtiness is, again, one of the entertaining aspects of this movie, and we also find an ex-boyfriend of Gemma turns up as well. In fact, the English community in Normandy is, it's a source of a lot of fun satire. Patrick, played by Mel Rideau. The male actors don't always do this movie credit, but it is very entertaining. It's a comedy drama, and no surprises, no spoilers, as always from me, but when you have a character like Martin Joubert, played always with such zest by Luchini, who is so wonderfully expressive, remember him in The House, Francois Ozon's film, and there again he was a degree removed from the action and living someone else's life vicariously. Here he's got a wife, Valerie, played by Isabel Candelier, working in his bakery. He's got a son who appears to be dumber than he actually is. He can't take his eyes off the gorgeous Gemma. And is her fate going to parallel that in Flaubert's novel? This is the question mark in a movie which, it's frothy, it's satirical, but it's extremely entertaining, despite a rather obtrusive musical score and some performances that aren't first rate, which I've mentioned. But Arden's excellence is always, and Luchini is absolutely to die for, because he's one of the finest of French actors.
I'm glad you actually pointed that out, Richard, because clearly we have to obviously make sure that we're correct at all times. And people might have been saying, Mia Wasikowska, she's not in the movie. You're quite right. We were actually looking at Madame Bovary, the Flaubert trailer, as opposed to Gemma Bovary. It's like, you know, easily done, I'm sure Stuart would acknowledge.
We could
have let it go. And now, of course, the question is, what is the difference between the Wasikowska? I mean, they're both 2014 movies. But there we are, Gemma Bovary, as you rightly say, a contemporary piece, but still based on the Flaubert period piece, which was Madame Bovary. She's very important. I mean, I don't know, with that piece of vital information, it's like deducing the whole case, isn't it, Stuart? It's like a Sherlock Holmes asked me. You looked at the wrong movie. You were looking at the wrong movie in the same town where Flaubert wrote his masterpiece.
The thing is that Sherlock Holmes, I mean, this is how Guy Ritchie got his career back. And then, of course, look what he does with Man from Uncle.
Life imitates art. Typical uptight English woman, especially when it comes to love, and all sorts of things are actually there. Now, Stuart, the question is, now we're looking at the right trailer. Is this a movie which would actually go, or would you say, no, I prefer the period piece with Mia Wasikowska? I can't even pronounce her surname now. It's ridiculous still.
I think I'd go and watch Gemma Arterton any day of the week, so yeah, I think I'd go.
I think you're
absolutely
right, you know, because she is a very talented actress, and she can do comedy. She also can do tragedy, and she's excellent both on stage and screen. And remember The Dangerous Alice Creed, I think it was, where she's kidnapped, graphic scenes in that, and she was excellent in that. So she is an actress who's been widely recognised.
And her sister's pretty good as well.
With that, but there's talent as well. And Luchini, I mean, rather like whether you had used to have Fernandel and you used to have Michel Piccoli and Philippe Noiré, a whole series of absolutely marvellous French actors, Bourville was another one, who they don't all look like Romain Duris, who loves his own looks and is also a very good actor. But
clearly what Gemma Bovary really needs, stepping into the role portrayed by Jason Fleming, is a little touch of Gérard Depardieu. Anyway, enough of such
Gérard
magic.
Gérard Depardieu wouldn't quite.
Would he not? You don't think so? A
Russian actor these days, I think.
Well, exactly.
And I also think that, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, he's, of course, he's marvellous in Serrano and in many roles, but having seen him in Welcome to New York playing Dominique Strauss-Kahn, the images of that still haunt me.
Manon des Sources, classic.
Oh, and Jules de Ferret, absolutely superb. I mean, there's no question, Depardieu is one of the finest of the world actors, but there's also absolutely no doubt that in playing Strauss-Kahn, I have never before seen a movie where he actually appears at a press conference, and this is filmed, and this is the first scene of the film, where he damns the character he's about to play, we're about to see, and then having put on more weight than I can describe on air, also proceeds to relish scenes where Strauss-Kahn is humiliated. It's so obvious he's being portrayed. So Depardieu leaves his mark.
Richard, stay on the positive. We've had, for a rare time, for the first time in several weeks actually, not one but two positive recommendations from your good self, Mistress America and Gemma Bovary. Not Madame Bovary, Gemma
Bovary. Both marvellous.
Oh, there we are. Do you want to very quickly sum up Edinburgh, because it's taken us 3 weeks to actually work through the festival and your appearances up there, and indeed what you were checking out. I do believe that you wanted to mention David Bailey, Picasso and Scottish artists' exhibitions.
Yes, it's interesting because with Hollywood House there is an exhibition at the Queen's Gallery. This is part of Hollywood House, as is, of course, that beautiful, romantic, ruined abbey. And the Scottish artists include Ramsay, they include Wilkie. Various monarchs had favourite artists. It's a small exhibition, but it's well worth seeing when you tour the Hollywood House. In fact, they've been touring since 1832, when during the period of such fascination with Mary Stuart there always has been, and seeing the tragic as well as the comic in Holyrood House, because Charles II had a great hall erected and portraits painted of all the Scottish kings, and they all bore, most of them bore a remarkable resemblance to Charles himself, which I thought was really very funny. Regarding the Lee Miller and Picasso exhibition at the National Portrait Gallery, I really think this is so fascinating. I have to say that I hadn't realized that Picasso had escaped problems with the Germans during the occupation because he was a citizen, though in exile, of fascist Spain, which, of course, was one of their allies. And what we see is his relationship with Lee Miller, a great friend. It began in 1937. It continued until his death. And Miller was a model and also, and of course, a noted photographer and a fabulous beauty. And these are wonderful insights into the life of one of the great artistic geniuses, and also a top photographer, and I really would recommend this exhibition in a gallery where, I have to say, when you enter the National Portrait Gallery, it was reopened in 2011, and it's really entering the Victorian age as you walk into its through its portals into its form of courtyard, and around it are murals which they're very Victorian, and you could easily laugh at them, but they restored them very lovingly, and the lighting is superb, and you get then a chronological look at some of the great figures in Scottish history. You can certainly see, as with a painting at the Queen's Gallery, the exhibition I mentioned on the Scottish artists, why Bonnie Prince Charlie, because of his early looks when young.
Richard, we'll hold it there, because in fact you mentioned the Scottish National Portrait Gallery. I've just pulled up on our Facebook page for Stuart's benefit, because Stuart didn't even realise we had a Facebook page for the Midweek Drive Morning Edition of Midweek Drive and Shows. So Southside Broadcasting, that's all you need for that. But an image of your good self actually posing. It's a good pose, would you say, Stuart, of Richard? Sort of striking.
It's a classic pose.
It's a classic pose, actually, of your good self in the English National Portrait Gallery. Do I need to actually raise the question, which one would you prefer, Scottish National Portrait Gallery or English National Portrait Gallery?
Both very, very different, because I think the one we went to with that memorable tour, one of the, of course, it's world famous, and there's so many different exhibitions held there. They are very different. The Scottish one is more it's more the permanent collection with an occasional exhibition. I think they complement each other very well. I will say that. Very interesting also to go to the National Gallery in Edinburgh, which I hadn't been to before, and there was a David Bailey exhibition. It had been at the National Portrait Gallery in London, and it really is recommended because it shows a whole variety of Bailey's work, not all of which I liked. I do think that some of his works which symbolise death with skulls and the like, and also some of his paintings are...
It's more for the police force, isn't it, really? You know, or crime writers.
Standard to the great... photographs of stars and famous individuals, including, for example, Kate Moss, which is so iconic. But much to admire there in a very large exhibition.
Well, there we are. Stuart, are you a portrait gallery person?
I am. Not avid, but if I'm somewhere and there's something like that, I'll take it in. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning, Richard Fitzwilliams?
Oh, yes, I certainly have.
Are you back with us again next week?
Look forward to it.
Hurrah!
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, and I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained, then rode us all the way into New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Windshield wipers slapping time, I was holding Bobby's hand in mine. Help me, honey, feeling good was easy, darling, when he sang the blues. Hey, feeling good was good enough for me. Good enough for me and my Bobby.
Eva MacDonald, how are you?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you.
One or two challenges with the car, i.e. it needs fuel to actually go.
Yes.
But thankfully you're here, which is very important, because you had to run around. I thought you were running all around Lincoln, which is always wonderful. We were talking about the National Portrait Gallery, clearly with Richard Fitzwilliams and Emma Tenson, of course, who was with us for that one. Might be joining us later on in the production. Still to go, of course, we've got camping expert and caravan expert Rob Ganley, Carly Schuber from Go Outdoors. We've also got William Sitwell back from France and the Dordogne. Dean Elliott from the Simon Garfunkel story is also scheduled to say a few words. But now, Stuart, a gentleman you're very excited to speak to, I believe.
I am indeed, yes.
From one detective chief inspector, formerly now crime writer, to another legendary soul, who of course has taken that pathway, and astoundingly, 30 years ago when he actually stopped being in the police, Arthur McKenzie, can it really be three decades?
I think it is, yeah.
Lordy, lordy, lordy. That's well, what can I say? It just shows that time ultimately is just an illusion. Before we go into crime, and Stuart's already talking about talking murder. Lord, you know, I didn't think it was that bad a show. but in terms of a recent athletics, were you happy as an athletic person yourself with Greg Rutherford?
Absolutely delighted. I was absolutely delighted with the lad.
Do you think he was lucky?
No, absolutely not. You don't get lucky to win Olympics, well, Commonwealth. No chance.
It's the line that a lot of commentators have saying, oh, Greg Rutherford, he's
very
lucky.
Yeah, well, they can do it, can't they? Just jump over to bed and get a pen or a bloody laptop, and that's about it.
There we are. So what do you think? An outside bet for BBC Sports Personality of the Year, Greg Rutherford? Or you say, no, he doesn't stand any chance?
I think it would probably be Jessica Ennis, I would think.
Really? Right. Well, obviously coming back from all the... Did you feel that it was a satisfactory overall European Championships?
It was a World Championships.
You're quite right. World Championships. You see, that's why you're the athletic expert. Exactly, yes. Was it a satisfying World Championships?
Yeah. Quite enjoyed it. I think the presentation's been pretty good. I haven't been dwelling on sort of run-ups to the, you know, seeing people getting their shorts off and all this sort of stuff. I think it's been pretty well slick, and as you would expect from China anyhow.
Now, clearly keeping the sporting thing going, I don't know, Stuart, are you a sporting person? Are you sort of catch on the athletics?
I mean, I am a bit, yeah.
In a matter of, I don't know, about 18 or so days from now, maybe 21 days, there's a little thing that's actually happening which even takes place at St James Park in Newcastle. I do believe it's this Rugby World Cup either. Exactly. We've come along such a long way since 1997. Was that now? Was it 1987? Which was, of course, the first one of the Webb Ellis Trophy. Arthur, will you be going to check out the St James Park action for the Rugby World Cup 2015?
I'm going to try if I can get a ticket. It's not that easy. I think the tickets have been just about sold out.
22 days, 11 hours, 17 minutes, and 7 seconds to go. Just in case you're wondering, yeah. But we'll talk more about the Rugby World Cup as the thing proceeds, because Arthur, you are our main man, our officially designated correspondent for the Rugby World Cup. So.
Well, is that right?
Yeah, that's sort of true. We'll talk about that as well. Eva, are you a Rugby World Cup sort of person? Or?
Well, I got into the Football World Cup when it was on, so
This could be a whole new experience for the whole thing. In case you're wondering, Namibia, 5,000 to 1 outsiders. Just wanted to raise that there.
Worth a pound.
Exactly so. Let's progress. Stuart, would you like to share with Arthur your own particular pathway into becoming a crime writer, and why death, murder, and all sorts of other areas, specifically talking murder, is something which I think you, together with Art, it'd be like a twin spearhead of joy. You wouldn't think. Anyway, Stuart, over to you.
Morning, Arthur.
Morning.
We've got a bit of a connection, me and you, although you probably won't be able to pick it up from my accent.
Do you think he was born, Arthur? This shocked me to the core this morning. Stuart Gibbon, just give a few more words for Arthur.
Well, Tarkin Heath, Bonnie Lad.
It's not,
bit of a clue.
He was born in
Gateshead.
And you spent how many years there?
16.
16 English years in
school.
Gateshead.
In Gateshead.
That's amazing. That's what it is. Well, you see, all good stuff comes from the north, doesn't it, anyhow?
That's something I've regularly said, Arthur.
It always rises to the top in the end.
That's exactly it.
I'm beginning to think these days, with a couple of guests of Professor Scott Davidson, of course, that Arthur, you refuse to do these shows unless there's a Geordie at the other end of the studio. You know? It's clearly the way forward. Anyway, Stuart, over to you.
My path might have been very different. I was born in Lowfell, Gateshead. Went to school there, and I wanted to join the police, and particularly the cadets. I was in the volunteer cadets in Gateshead at the police station. I applied to join the cadets, but they weren't recruiting at the time in Northumbria. So I wrote to all the police forces down the country to the Midlands. Then I gave up a little bit, but I just pinged a little letter off to London as well, not thinking that the Met Police would ever come back to me, and they were the only ones that replied. So I decided I'd give it a crack, and at 16 I was on my way to London.
And when was that?
1980. Yeah.
I was just about retiring then.
Absolutely, yeah. And then I did 20 years in London and then transferred up to Lincolnshire with a family and the last 12 years. So I did 30 years in total, various different things. Very similar to yourself, but
yeah.
I've not written a book. I have to say, The Cop on the Tyne's now on my list of
it is a
books
classic
to read. Yeah, absolutely.
I still think an animated version is what we're looking for. But yeah. That's
it. No, that's really interesting. I think a lot of more cops should be writing the stuff up, because people, people talk about the police, and it's not getting a very good press at the moment. And I think sometimes forget the. I used to call them the midden men, you know, the men that come down in the middle of the night, get rid of all the your excrement out your bin, and take it away. And I just feel very strongly that sometimes that we protect the public, but sometimes the public don't appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think you're right. And again, when we see some of these TV programmes, you cringe a little bit when they're the fly-on-the-wall ones. But having said that, the amount of times I've been sat with somebody and they've said, oh, I didn't realise you had to put up with that sort of rubbish, you know, abuse and that sort of thing. So I think you're right. It needs... They do get a bit of a bad press, to be honest.
Yeah, I cringe at these programmes because at the end of the day, you see some ferocious car chase and some... they said, oh, they've just got a community service order. You know what I mean?
It
drives me crackers. I know you can't really get involved with that, but it just drives me absolutely crackers.
Yeah, it's not a great deal of a deterrent.
Of course, I'm a bit of a dinosaur, in as much as I was joined in the mid-50s as a cadet, you know. So I've seen the back end of the war, and I sort of see a different attitude altogether. And I think there's a lot of good come out of the job recently, mine. I think there's a lot more protection for the cops in as much that they've got the gear. But I wonder why everybody's got to be handcuffed now when they get into a car. Doesn't matter who it is, you've got to handcuff them, which is really a sad reflection on the times, isn't it?
It is, very much so. Yeah, things will have changed in the years that you were serving and have come out. And again, since the short time I've left, things have changed. And certainly from when I joined in the 80s, life on Mars, etc. Well, I think we all know. Some of that is actually spot on, unfortunately, but there you go.
Yeah, there was bits of it spot on, yeah, I agree. The thing is, the guys that I joined with were, you know, had just been in the war, and had been dealing with horrendous things in the war, and just didn't stand any nonsense at all on the streets. I mean, when I was touring, when I first in Newcastle, I remember going to the East End on me, you know, on me attachment. And the guy made his walk in the gutter. He says, you walk in the gutter. And I had to walk in the gutter with this old cop. And it was like, I thought, what the hell have I joined here? Like, it was just amazing, really. And
so when you were walking in the gutter, was that meant to keep you in your place? Was that the sort of line of that, to actually know that ultimately...
Well, I don't know. I must admit, when I showed anybody around, I didn't mean to make them walk in the gutter. But... It was just an amazing sort of experience to have, you know. And the guy actually commanded me respect at the same time.
Yeah.
So if he commanded my respect, he was obviously going to command the respect of everybody in the street. This guy just used to shout at people in the street, and he used to drop, if they were dropping litter, and they would pick it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
Can you imagine it now?
You hit the nail on the head there. The one word is respect. It's respect for authority, respect for parents, respect for other people, and self-respect as well. But in those days, and certainly even when I was in, respect with a little bit of fear on the end as well.
Yeah.
And that if you didn't do what you were told and what you were expected to do, there'd be a consequence.
Let's move to the next generation of wonderful souls. Eva MacDonald. I mean, you're listening to two cops there, two former cops. It's like episode of Zcast come to life. It's genius. from your own perspective, Eva. What are your thoughts on the police, etc.? I mean, do you have respect for them? I mean, or would you say no? It would be a lot better if they were armed.
Well, I never think that being armed is a good thing, because it can always turn into more violence, can't it? But the police sometimes, they do their job, but I'm not sure how well. Sometimes it can be a bit pushy, maybe. So.
Arthur, thoughts on that one?
Well, you know, there was an expression when I was on the job that the public get the police service they deserve, because it's drawn from the public. So the attitude of the police is only reflecting the attitude of the public.
Robert Peel would probably sort of have something to say. Would you agree with that
statement? I would, yeah. I mean, when I joined the police, I joined it as a career. And I think more nowadays, not everybody, but more nowadays, it's like a vocation rather than a career that people will go in for maybe a couple of years with the intention of coming out and doing something else. And when you go in with an attitude like that, sometimes you haven't got the longer term, and everybody else is, you know, best wishes at heart. So I think you've got less people that do it for a career now, for the long term, for the long haul.
Arthur, we will be featuring Chris Jones of the Night Drivers, this week's selection from Cameron Tilbury, but I have a sense that you might, in the light of the fact that it's Steampunk Weekend, or particularly a thing called Asylum this weekend throughout the city of Lincoln, you might particularly like this one from Professor Elemental. It's called Fighting Trousers, because I feel actually when you're in the police force, you know, possibly actually going for your fighting trousers might be a way forward. Are you ready for this, Arthur?
Go on.
Ah, Jeffrey. What's that you have in your hand, boy? Pass it over. A telegram. Oh dear. Seems someone has been biting me. Fetch me my trousers at once. No, not those. Those are my time travel trousers. Those are my tea trousers. That's it. Those ones.
I don't like your tweet, sir.
Will.
Teach you the professor's ready.
Not.
Let's see who strikes the loudest.
Lou.
Put on my fighting trousers.
Oh.
Sorry, I'm sorry, Jeffrey, but it gets my goat. Gets my dander right up. It's bloody told him.
No, no jazz solo. This is supposed to be a diss song. Jeffrey, get off the drums.
I know, Arthur. Secretly, you've always sought out Professor Elemental and his fighting trousers.
I just want to know what he's on.
Stuart suggested we should actually play that as opposed to the sirens to calm potential riots down. Think of it for Notting Hill. You know, it's mine. Bring me my fighting trousers. And Eva, thoughts on Professor Elemental?
It was
all
right. Catchy tune.
Extraordinary. So, just a quick heads up, returning to the Rugby World Cup, Arthur, South Africa versus Scotland, New Zealand versus Tonga, and Samoa versus Scotland are the matches you can catch at St. James Park in Newcastle. Saturday, October the 3rd, Friday, October the 9th, and Saturday, October the 10th. So, do you fancy New Zealand, Tonga? Are New Zealand going to win it? Or is it a case of, no, they've never won the World Cup outside their own sort of land? They'll collapse.
They've got to be in with a good chance, I would think.
I put it down to the haka, personally. I mean, it's scary. Yeah. But at the same time, you can't resist the urge to laugh, really. A bit like some of your tales, Arthur. You know, it's a bit scary, but ultimately, it's quite amusing. Eva MacDonald, would you like to throw those last two questions to Arthur McKenzie, the McKenzie Meister,
yes,
in your own inimitable way?
Have you had a wonderful, interesting telephonic link with us?
It's been absolutely fantastic.
Oh.
And will we be hearing again from you soon?
Sorry?
Will we be hearing again from you soon?
Well, I hope so.
Very much so. Very briefly, the murder, talk more murder thing is that you're arranging, Stuart. Would you actually just give it a little
plug? Yeah, I help out writing groups and people who are writing crime to make sure that what they put in their books is accurate and it's realistic. And I also talk to writing groups about murder investigation just so they've got an idea so that when they do produce the work, it's not something that's completely, you know,
rubbish.
Unreal. Yeah, that's the
exactly
word I'm looking for.
I don't worry, Robert. And in terms of, because, I mean, last week, of course, Arthur shared the very graphic tale, you can catch it on the podcast if you wish, of the severed head and the head that ended up in the bait box. Do you remember that one, Eva?
Probably.
Yeah.
Give me a bit of time and I'll
actually
remember.
Why would you? You weren't even on the show last week. You were poorly, so pointless question, really. Once again.
Hey, I don't know. I think I'm a bit off this morning.
Did you notice that? Yeah, you got your Madame Bovary thing. Was it Gemma Bovary? Where we going? Are we looking at the right year? It's the last show for August 2015. What can I say? You know, life continues. You know, we'll be back in September with like a whirling dervish of a production. Yes. How can people find out, Stuart, about these workshops and how Writing East Midlands, of course, very much at the heart of this?
Yeah, definitely. The Writing East Midlands website and also the Nottingham Writers Studio. I'm going to be doing some work with them in December, and people can come along and listen to the talk about the challenges facing a senior detective when they have to investigate a murder.
Personally, a dream team, yourself and Arthur McKenzie, two Geordie lads, one sounds like he's still from Newcastle, the other one isn't.
Gives you a heart, doesn't it?
Yeah. Would you be up for that, Arthur?
Yeah,
of
course.
Yeah,
well, I went to a writing group once and I was talking to them and I suddenly realised they're all passing each other's homework around, and I had to tell them they were doing it all wrong.
They were passing each other's homework around. I mean, that's hardly cricket, as many a kind of.
Well,
Australian,
I think they're all frightened to tell the truth about everybody's work.
You never know. Coming up in the next part of the programme, we'll be going camping. In fact, there's a suggestion, Arthur, that in terms of the 21st century, one of the last bastions of masculinity is the tendency to actually go out camping. Obviously, under the tarpaulin as opposed to some kind of sort of aspect, etc. Is that something that resonates with yourself, or would you say nonsense? When was the last time you went camping?
I don't really know. I've got to be honest, I don't know. I think we talk about these things, and I sometimes think they're irrelevant. I think a lot of people go camping, they go glamping now, don't they? They carry their semi-detached around with them, don't they?
I mean, Eva, you're more of a glamper as opposed to a camper, but I suspect. Having said that, I'm being very stereotypical here, because it was a matter of weeks ago you were doing the Duke of Edinburgh Award, really, and just share with us what were you walking up and hill and down Dale on?
Yes, pretty much. It was get up at 7, get off at 8, and literally walk for the whole day
walk
until
for the
8
whole
o'clock.
Day, exactly. But apparently this recent survey suggests that a third of men would prefer to go on a camping experience alone or just with their dog. Anyway, that's something we'll be talking about in the second part of the programme, together with William Sitwell, Dean Elliott from the Simon and Garfunkel story, and hopefully a little smidgen of Emma Tinson. Arthur, we've asked those last two questions. You will return, so happy trails. Have a great Thursday.
Yeah, thank you.